listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What this movie is saying is that women like being hurt and like being used, and that you as a man are entitled to use women. I just can't think of a worse thing to be teaching our young men.
The fallen world sniffs out this alien smell of the resurrection on you and will seek to stamp it out. It recognizes it for the threat that it is. The principle of this world is death.
If salvation is my personal relationship with Jesus, it makes our problem somehow having an emotional or personal distance from God. So it completely takes the idea of sin out of the question.
While snow blowing our driveways, hardy Minnesotans love to listen to Issues, etc.
The old proverb, of course, is that a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And if that first step is in the wrong direction, in fact, in the opposite direction that you ought to be going to get where your journey you think should lead you, correcting that first step takes a lot more than just a few steps. So how is it that we have come 40 plus years past Roe v. Wade in 1973 and are only now beginning to deal with the medical issues surrounding late-term abortion and having to fight tooth and nail just to get an even sympathetic legislature at the national level to consider a ban on late-term abortions? How could that possibly be? Well, I mean, a simple answer is, of course, the first step of that journey of 1,000 miles was in the opposite direction of where we ought to be going. We're going to be talking about late-term abortion bans and women's health. Clark Forsythe will join us, senior counsel at Americans United for Life. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We are coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Rebecca Curtis will join us. We'll talk about raising multiple children. It's a task. It's hard. It takes discipline. And she says if they were trying to do it like other people do it, they have 7 kids, by the way, they wouldn't be able to do it. We'll find out what she means by that. Pastor David Peterson will join us for our regular weekly series as we look forward to Sunday morning, the one-year lectionary. We will be looking at Matthew chapter 15, the faith of a Canaanite woman and Jacob wrestling with God. It's going to be beautiful how all of these things actually come together as we look forward to Sunday morning. And then Terry Mattingly will join us. We'll talk about the media coverage, comments made by Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker about President Obama's Christian faith. He got a gotcha question. He kind of fumbled with the answer. And why is it that the president's religious beliefs continue to be, before and during his 2 terms, newsworthy? Should they be newsworthy? We'll answer that question with Terry Mattingly in the last half hour of the program. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943. If you got questions or comments as we continue the conversation, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, we love to hear from you. You can always join the conversation through the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about late-term abortion bans and women's health, Clark Forsythe, the senior counsel at Americans United for Life, author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade, and he's also written a column for The Federalist titled A 5-Month Abortion Limit Would Protect Women's Health. Clark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you.
Can you give us some perspective here? How is it that 40-plus years on past Roe v. Wade, we are just now having to fight really tooth and nail to get a late-term abortion ban, basically a ban on abortions past 20 weeks?
The Supreme Court and the federal courts, they're to blame. They've been to blame for 42 years. They created Roe versus Wade. The Supreme Court enforces or imposes Roe versus Wade through the federal courts, and they have refused to allow a strong late-term prohibition up to now.
Were the questions that are now being brought forward in a legal context about the health impacts of late-term abortions, were they even considered by the Roe court or the other courts surrounding that pivotal decision?
No, they weren't. As I mentioned in the Federalist article, you can go and hear the original arguments. You can read the transcripts at a website called oyez.org, oyez.org. When the justices decided to expand the abortion right to viability and beyond, they did so for the purely pragmatic reason of expanding access to abortion. They thought about viability in terms of the size of the unborn child, but they gave, the evidence is they gave no consideration whatsoever to maternal health or risks to maternal health.
How would you say that impacted then their judicial reasoning on the subject?
Well, it was very result-oriented and very arbitrary. A majority of the justices decided to create a right to abortion and sweep away the abortion laws, and then they decided, now, how are we going to write this? And how are we going to justify this? And it took them 14 months or more to decide how to write it, but it was all result-oriented and arbitrary, and because they gave no consideration to maternal health, they have created the public health vacuum that we've seen for 42 years with situations like Kermit Gosnell, the abortionist who was convicted of killing women and killing babies born alive in Philadelphia in May of 2013. And there have been Kermit Gosnells before there was Kermit Gosnell, others around the country. So the court didn't know what it was doing. It basically became the National Abortion Control Board, but it has no ability, it has no capacity to step in to problems, to regulate, to limit, to take account of problems, and yet it's the courts have imposed the sweeping scope of Roe for 42 years now.
Let's set it, if we could, in kind of the international context. This leaves and has left the United States in some very shady company when it comes to countries, developed countries that permit this kind of thing, who we embed with by that decision in 73.
Well, the sweeping scope of the Roe decision has isolated the U.S. as one of only four nations. There are 195 around the globe, 195 nations. We're one of just four: China, North Korea, Canada, and the U.S. that allows abortion for any reason after fetal viability. And that's not because the American people approve that. It's not because Congress approved that or the states approve that. It's because of the edict in Roe v. Wade.
Now, someone might say, and let's just clarify, someone might say perhaps the medical data regarding late-term abortions was unavailable to the Roe court. How do you respond?
Well, we have much more data than they did then. We have much more data today on long-term risks, the risk of preterm birth, for example. But they did have data. And in fact, if you go to that website, oyez.org, you'll hear the attorneys tell the court in 1971 and 1972 that the risks of abortion double after the first trimester. Or I think she might have said double or triple. So that general statement was made to the justices, but they ignored that, and they ignored the data they did have about immediate risks and long-term risks.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the actual data that should have been considered back in 73, at the very least should have been considered when the court was making up its mind. It sounds like had already made up its mind about the Roe case. What are we looking at in terms of actual medical data as we sit here in 2015?
Well, the data today or the data then? The data then There was one of the problems the court stumbled into and created was that they had no evidence. There were no trials in these cases, no evidence, no expert witnesses, no data that was discussed in a trial. All the sociological and medical data that the court considered was given to the justices at the Supreme Court level in interest group briefs by Planned Parenthood and similar organizations. And so it wasn't considered at trial or through the advocacy process. There were medical studies from around the world at the time that presented to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court basically ignored it. But over the last 20 years, we have seen a growing body of international peer-reviewed medical studies showing an increased risk, for example, of preterm birth, showing an increased risk of breast cancer after abortion, showing an increased risk of a mental trauma after abortion. Now, these data have to be handled carefully, but nevertheless, I mean, on preterm birth, there are studies from women from 35 countries. It's not just U.S. data. It's not just American women. It's women from 35 countries, medical studies showing an increased risk of preterm birth and future pregnancies after abortion. So this is global data. And the court didn't have that back in 71, 72, but they did have data that should have cautioned them against creating a national right to abortion.
Two final questions for you, if you would, Clark. What is your confidence level when it comes to both the legislature dealing with this data with respect to the harmfulness of abortion, period, but the pointed harmfulness of late-term abortion, and what is your confidence level of the current court, who will certainly at some point hear a challenge to a late-term abortion ban should the legislature pass it?
Well, this issue should be decided by the people through their elected representatives in the legislatures and not by the Supreme Court. So the legislatures have, as the courts themselves have recognized, the legislatures have a better capacity for sifting data and statistics and evidence than the courts do, especially the Supreme Court. And so the legislatures should decide this issue, and it should be returned to the American people. As my article at the Federalist pointed out, 13, 14 states have already passed a 20-week limit, and several other states are considering a 20-week limit right now, and Congress is considering it. And they certainly can look at the negative impact on the unborn child and the negative impact on women from late-term abortions. This issue the court has had an opportunity to look at a 20-week prohibition from Arizona, and about a year ago, the court declined to look at the Arizona case. But I'm hoping that other cases, perhaps from Texas or Mississippi or Alabama, might get up to the Supreme Court in the next year or two or three, and the court should approve a 20-week limit. It's common sense, and invariably supported by majorities of Americans who think that that's just too much.
Clark Forsythe is senior counsel at Americans United for Life. He's authored the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade. He's also written a column for The Federalist titled A 5-Month Abortion Limit Would Protect Women's Health. You'll find a link to Americans United for Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Clark, thank you very much for your time. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Todd, for having me.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about raising a big family, multiple children. Now, I grew up in a family that I thought was rather large, 5 kids spread out eventually over about 15 years. And I didn't think it was that unusual, but it was a larger family at the time. Nowadays, the trend seems to be going, taking either one or the other fork in the road. That is, families that are small, 1 or 2 kids, or families that are increasingly even larger. We'll talk about raising multiple children with Rebecca Curtis right after this.
call it what you like. I call it life. I call it life.
I prayed for things nobody. We have a special offer for Issues Etc. Reformation Club members. If you join or upgrade your membership in our monthly or annual giving program during January or February, we'll add the new Concordia Psalter to the list of current membership benefits. T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. You can find out the benefits of being an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Or contact Craig, 618-223-8385, or Craig at issuesetc.org. Join or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in January or February, and we'll send you the new Concordia Psalter along with your other premiums. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You can sing and recite the church's hymn book, the Psalms, using modern English and more contemporary musical settings in the new Concordia Psalter. Check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Concordia Psalter by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Make the Concordia Psalter part of your devotional life this year. 1-800-325-3040, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, the new Concordia Psalter.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.